Welcome to Heart to Heart with Anna. I am Anna Jaworski, and I hope you've been enjoying this Cardiac Athletes Spotlight series as much as I have been. It has been so much fun. Lars Andrews wrote a book called Cardiac Athletes, and he was actually a guest on my show some seasons ago. He's now gearing up to assemble Cardiac Athletes 2, featuring stories about athletes who have undergone cardiac procedures. Some of the athletes were born with congenital heart defects, and some have acquired heart disease. I've been enjoying interviewing all of these different athletes from all over the world, and today we have an international show, which will be so much fun. So, welcome to Heart with Anna, Graham Sutton.
Thank you.
Well, Graham, let's start first by telling us where you're located.
I'm in Melbourne, Australia, in one of the eastern suburbs of Melbourne, Australia, in a suburb called Ashwood.
So we're down under today in Heart to Heart with Anna. Let's start off by having you tell us what your cardiac condition is.
I didn't know I had a cardiac condition till about 2.5 years ago, and I discovered I had a bicuspid aortic valve. And it got infected, and because I was a very fit and healthy person to begin with, it sort of got ignored until it sort of came to crisis point.
How old were you when you discovered you had a bicuspid aortic valve?
Basically, I was 10 days before my birthday. Oh, no, actually, on my birthday I discovered, actually. I was in a job interview and I sort of collapsed and I ended up in an ambulance.
Oh, my goodness.
And ended up in the ER and they couldn't work out. All I could say is I feel rotten. I can't work out why. And they finally put a stethoscope to my chest. And they said, how long have you had this murmur for? And I basically said, what murmur? And they said, we know what this is.
Wow. Okay. So were you 20 or 30?
Oh, sorry. I was 50.
Oh, my goodness. You were 50 before you discovered you had a bicuspid aortic valve.
Yeah. And I, you know, like I was a fair, reasonably good age group triathlete, sort of, you know, used to come in the top 10 of my age group and probably 10% of the overall fields even at 50. So there was no sign that my heart was defective, as you could say, or the performance of my heart never stopped me doing anything.
Right, right. So have you always been an athlete, Graham?
Well, not really, no. I used to be one of the sort of the what would be called the nerdy group, the academic group in high school and university. Mm-hmm. And then I think about 29, I decided that had to be more to life than working and coming home.
Good for you.
And so I started swimming with a master's group, which I don't know if you have them in America, but they're just sort of like trying to get sort of adults to swim.
Right. Yeah, we do have them. At least we have them in Texas.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so you started swimming. And did you ever get a physical?
Oh, no, I found out that I wasn't as bad a swimmer as I thought I was. You know, like I was probably ended up in the fastest lane, even though I never thought much of my swimming. And someone sort of said, oh, do you want to try out with this triathlon coach? He's, you know, he's starting a new season and do you want to join in? And I did, and it sort of developed from there. I sort of discovered that at 29 I wasn't as bad as an athlete as I thought.
Okay. And so in all of that time, did you ever have a physical, I mean, like an annual physical even, where the doctor might have listened to your heart?
Probably about the same time I worked for senior research chemist for a company called Nufarm, which is a manufacturing, well, they call it agricultural chemicals. But it's basically a euphemism for pesticides. So they, as a matter of course, always put us through tests every year to make basically legally cover themselves, as you would probably guess. And no, there wasn't any sign there was anything wrong.
Okay, so you've lived 5 decades with a bicuspid aortic valve, perfectly fine, to the point where you're competing in triathlons, which is very hard on the body, and then you collapse.
Yeah, and to a fairly high level too.
Right, like right. You know, yeah, you're in the top tier and then you collapse. That must have been terrifying for you.
Yeah, it was sort of a 6-month lead up that the infection started. And I think what stirred it up is I had a dental appointment and they cleaned my teeth. Mm. And that teeth cleaning meant that some of the bacteria from my mouth got into my bloodstream and attached
Yep.
itself to the heart.
Right straight to that valve that was having problems.
Yeah. And I was having 6 months of apparently unrelated medical issues, and I basically wasn't training very well, and all of a sudden I felt old, and I thought, oh, maybe it's just that I'm 50 and I've suddenly, I'm wearing out. The condition slowly got worse, and I found, I think in the week beforehand, I found that I'd walk 800 meters to the train and then need another 2 hours of sleep to recover. And I was developing sweats, and but I'd had deep vein, I was diagnosed with deep vein thrombosis 3 months before,
Oh
and the
my
doctors just
goodness. That's very
unprovoked.
painful from what I hear. I've never had it
Yeah.
happen, but I have friends who have had it happen and they say it's extremely painful.
But anyway, the doctor just listed as unprovoked and didn't investigate it. And it wasn't until the hospital they said, oh, it's probably the bacterial colony on your valve snapping off. And they said, you were lucky you didn't have a stroke.
Yeah, you were lucky you didn't have a stroke. So I imagine they hospitalized you and started giving you massive antibiotics.
Oh, yes. They pumped me full of IV antibiotics, and they did a TOE, or I think you call it a T in the US, which is a transesophageal cardiogram.
Yeah,
And they found
echocardiogram.
this huge, well, the growth was as The length of the growth was as long as the diameter of the valve.
Oh
And I
my
took
gosh.
and it got passed to the cardiology department, and I've never seen a cardio surgeon panic, you know what I mean? But he came down and says, you need to be on the table tomorrow. You're at extreme stroke risk. This has to be fixed. And I basically didn't happen the next day because it was a Saturday, but by Wednesday that day, they actually formed a proper conference, and they operated on me and replaced the valve and cut out the infection and some probably other things that I don't really need to know. Better off not knowing too much what goes on, do you know what I mean? So
Wow. Now, were they able to do this transcatheter or was this an open heart procedure?
they had to cut me open.
Oh my goodness. That must have been terrifying for you.
I didn't honestly. My basic reaction is I don't want them to operate, but rationally, there wasn't a choice. And because it happened over 2 or 3 days, there wasn't any real time to panic about it or develop thoughts that would make you panic or anxious. Do you know what I mean? Like,
No, I don't
and
know, honey, because I think I'd have been in panic mode.
and it was, I think, too. Because I was sort of sick, extremely sick, and been sick for a long time, I sort of felt relief that they'd found something. And secondly, hospital staff were saying, oh, you've got endocarditis. Oh, we just got to give you antibiotics, and this is the treatment we're going to give you. So it was all very impersonal. There was no sort of
Nobody
panic
else
or
seemed
sick.
really upset about it because they'd seen
Yeah,
it
the staff
before.
were just sort of ho-hum, you know.
Heart to Heart with Anna is a presentation of Hearts Unite the Globe and is part of the HUG Podcast Network. Hearts Unite the Globe is a nonprofit organization devoted to providing resources to the congenital heart defect community to uplift, empower, and enrich the lives of our community members. If you would like access to free resources pertaining to the CHD community, please visit our website at www.congenitalheartdefects.com for information about CHD, the hospitals that treat children with CHD, summer camps for CHD survivors, and much, much more. You are listening to Heart with Anna. If you have a question or comment that you would like addressed on our show, please send an email to Anna Jaworski at anna@hearttoheartwithanna.com. That's anna@hearttoheartwithanna.com. Now, back to Heart with Anna.
Okay, so you think you're getting antibiotics. You think that, okay, now finally they found it, and then they come back and say, well, we're going to have to cut you open. Did you
Yeah.
have family there to be there by your side while you were going through this?
Well, my sister lives in the western suburbs of Melbourne, and I was hesitant to tell her that I was in hospital, but she was the my medical emergency contact, so I felt I had to. And the reason why I was a bit nervous about telling her is that she was going through being treated for cat liver and intestinal cancer.
Oh, my goodness.
And so I thought, I don't want to trouble her. And, you know, I just thought, stay away. If this is the infectious disease ward, you don't need to be here while you're on chemo, but she came anyway.
Oh, what and, a sweet sister.
Yeah. And my parents lived two hours from Melbourne in the inland.
So longevity runs in your family if your parents are still alive and you're already in your 50s.
Well, to be honest, Australia's healthcare system is fairly good.
So you were in tip-top shape to go ahead and have this surgery. And then what happened after you had the surgery?
Well, I was in hospital for 6 days. Mm-hmm. And, you know, like one of my questions is, oh, my life as a triathlete was over. Do you know what I mean? Because mm-hmm. it's a big part of what you do is, you know, like triathlon's sure. a fairly dedicated thing. And I'd been doing it for 30 years and it was a part of me. And I was thinking, oh, God, this is over. And I remember, I think one of the nurses came to me when I came out of anesthesia and said, oh, you're a triathlete. I'm so proud of you. And I said, I think I was a triathlete. He said, what do you mean? And I said, well, when something like this happens, it sort of puts a dampener on things. He said, nah, you'll be back to it.
I love
like,
her.
It'll take a while, but you can get back to it if you want to. You know, like
well,
this is only a blip.
Okay. Well, good. That's the kind of person you needed to have talk to you after you came out from anesthesia. So tell me about your cardiac rehab.
It was basically a walking program for 6 weeks. And to be quite honest, they wanted you to walk up and down the corridor in the week that you were in hospital. And I remember the day, next day in ICU, they woke me up and they helped me out of bed, insisted I got out of bed, which was a pretty cruel thing to do, a bit of tough love, mm-hmm. I suppose you call it, mm-hmm. and made me eat breakfast in sitting up. And so they had me moving the next day, basically, and I was walking up the corridors, the hospital, as I felt like it. Mm-hmm. And I got home and they basically, the walking program detailed at least 15 minutes a day at the start. Mm-hmm. And that was rather slow. And some days 15 minutes walk was quite honestly enough. You know what
right.
I mean?
Like it came right. home. And yeah.
For someone who'd done an Ironman 12 months before, you found 15-minute walk and then you felt like, oh, I just want to have a rest. You know
right.
what I mean?
But
by the end of 6 weeks, I think I was walking an hour twice a day and fairly briskly.
Wow.
And then in Australia, when you have open heart surgery, part of the program is they give you, send you off what they call cardiac rehab, which is a physio and a nutritionist and so on at the local hospitals. But they basically guided me through and said, oh, you can start riding a bike at about 6 weeks. You can start riding a bike now and just take things easy. And there's no restriction on the amount of time you do anymore, of exercise you do anymore. Just take it easy and just go easy is how you feel. At 6 weeks, the wound was healed enough. So I just used to go to the local pool, which is about 500 metres away. And I wasn't allowed to use my arms. So I used to basically just get in kick.
Right.
Now 45 minutes and just built. And more than anything else, because you're home, it's just good to get out. And
sure.
You know, and if you just get out to a pool and people see you kicking quite often, they'll sort of nod to you or say hello and you might mm-hmm. just talk to them for 2 minutes, but it was better than being
yeah,
around.
You don't need to be cooped up. That's not good. It's not good for you mentally.
And you know, even just doing things and giving you confidence, mm-hmm. even though it's a little thing, you know, it's not
sure. Absolutely.
And then I saw the cardiologist at the hospital at about 8 weeks, and I said, "Oh, so can I start? If I just start putting 30-second jogs into my walks on the proviso that if something doesn't feel right, I'll stop doing and put aside for a few weeks. Is that okay with you? Because no one would tell me when I can start going running again." And mm-hmm. she said, yeah, that's sensible. Just that's how you should probably treat it, all of your rehab from now.
Mm-hmm.
And she put a restriction on weightlifting. That's just because you've got a broken chest. You don't.
Mm-hmm.
They didn't want you to crush your chest again. And I started just training by myself. And I went back to work as a lifeguard.
As a lifeguard? So you went from not being able to swim with your arms just kicking to being able to save people?
But by about probably 2 months, I was swimming for an hour, and I was given okay to swim with them, do freestyle and backstroke.
That's impressive, Graham. That's really impressive. Wow. It sounds like you went about it the best way you possibly could. You listened to your body. You listened to your doctors. You took it easy to begin with, and you built yourself back up. So have you gone back to do a triathlon?
I did the sprint course series last summer. And yes, I went okay in it. And the times were a bit slower than what I'd like, but I just said, well, this is more of a confidence build to show that I can do it again.
Absolutely.
I think the biggest thing about getting back to it is that it's not the heart's been given a clear and say, oh, it's working wonderfully, but it's the fact that it cracks you open. It basically destroys all your core. But I did it, and I did quite well. You know, I was still coming. Mm-hmm. I think I was coming between the 10 and 20 in my age group for most of the season.
Wow, that's amazing. And you had that deep vein thrombosis to deal with as well.
And they had me on blood thinners anyway for the first 6 weeks, I think, or 8 weeks or something. So that helped with a deep vein thrombosis as well.
So what kind of valve did you get?
They put a porcine, a pig's valve in the end, I think because it just operates better.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it lasts longer because one of the issues about tissue valves, especially in the younger patients, is that it tends to scar up and calcify and they have to replace it very quickly, whereas this one's meant to last.
And it has to work hard because you're a hardworking man.
Yeah, but I was worried about that and I've been nervous about going up the high intensity areas, even though there's no medical reason for me not to, but I have this vision of going up and causing my heart to explode. You know what I mean? Sort of, even though it's an irrational feeling, but yeah.
Well, you lost the vision of the healthy Graham that you had known for so long.
Yeah.
Yeah. And that's a hard thing to lose.
And lack of fitness that I had, you know, I just don't have the, you know, like I train now, mm-hmm. I'm doing a half Ironman in about a month's time, first one since surgery. And I think I can do all the physical stuff and we'll wait and see what happens.
So tell me what being a cardiac athlete means to you, Graham.
Well, for me, one of the things is that I won't let things stop me. It might be a stubbornness or resilience, but I just think, well, I'm not going to let this totally ruin my life or turn me into invalid. So keeping going, being an athlete, no, I just refuse to. You know, if I give up, I'm going to become an invalid and I don't want to be an invalid.
Absolutely. That seems to be a very common theme. That's what a lot of you cardiac athletes say.
You just got to deal with the cards you've got and work around it. Do you know what I mean? You've got to have the mindset that, yes, okay, your body's not going to work maybe as well as it should, or things are harder or going to be harder and you may be sorer. But if you stop, you don't want to be an invalid.
Well, I love it. You have a very interesting story. Bicuspid aortic valve is the number one congenital heart defect, and most people aren't aware of that. But I was told by a cardiologist that it's projected that at least 3% of the population has a bicuspid aortic valve. And like you, most people don't even know it until something drastic happens, like what just happened to you. So I'm so glad that you're okay and that you're back out there performing. Are you going to be writing for Lars's new book?
Yes, I have put a chapter in.
Well, great. So for all of you listeners, I hope that you will check out Cardiac Athletes 2 and you'll get a chance to learn a little bit more about Graham Sutton. Thank you so much for coming on the program today, Graham.
Yeah, thank you, Anna.
It was a lot of fun. So thanks for listening today, folks. Please come back next week when we'll feature another cardiac athlete. And until then, remember, my friends, you are not alone.
Thank you again for joining us this week. We hope you have been inspired and empowered to become an advocate for the congenital heart defect community. Heart to Heart with Anna, with your host, Anna Jaworski, can be heard every Tuesday at 12 noon Eastern Time.